Chapter 1, Why We Teach People How to Make Money. It's amazing what you can come up with when you have no money, zero outside resources, and 119 people depending on you for their jobs, their homes, and even their prospects of dinner for the foreseeable future. That's pretty much the situation that my 12 fellow managers and I faced in February 1983, our first month in business as an independent company. We were supervisors and managers in a little factory in Springfield, Missouri, that up till now then had been owned by International Harvester. At the time, International Harvester was in big trouble, sinking faster than the Titanic. They were cutting loose operations like ours in a desperate attempt to stay afloat. When the company offered to sell us the factory, we jumped at the chance to save our jobs. It was like jumping into a leaky life raft in the middle of a hurricane. Our new company was loaded down with so much debt that the smallest wave would capsize us. We were scared. We couldn't rely on traditional ways of managing because they wouldn't produce the kind of results we needed in time to save us. So we grabbed for something new, based on what we thought of as the higher laws of business. The first higher law is you get what you give. The second higher law is it's easy to stop one guy, but it's pretty hard to stop 100. Law number 3, what goes around comes around. 4, you got to do what you got to do. Number 5, and probably the most toughest one of all inside an organization, is you got to wanna. Number 6, you can sometimes fool the fans, but you can never fool the players. Higher law number 7, when you raise the bottom, the top rises. Number 8, when people set their own targets, they usually hit them. Number 9, if nobody pays attention, people stop caring. Higher law of business number 10 is, as they say in Missouri, shit rolls downhill. By this we mean that change begins at the top. And the ultimate higher law of business? When you appeal to the highest level of thinking, you get the highest level of performance. I'll explain these as we go along. I don't know where I learned these laws. You don't hear about them in school. You pick them up in the street. I know they are real laws of business, and they are the reason we survived and have been successful ever since. It was out of these laws that we created the great game of business. These higher laws sum up our success. They emphasize how thoroughly dependent we are on one another and how strong we are because of it. I have often been asked to say exactly what the great game of business is. I have to admit I find this hard to do. It's not a system. It's not a methodology. It's not a philosophy or an attitude or a set of techniques. It's all of those things and more. It's a whole different way of running a company and of thinking about how a company should be run. What lies at the heart of the game is a simple proposition. The best, most profitable way to operate a business is to give everyone in the company a voice in how the company is run and a stake in the financial outcome, good or bad. Guided by this proposition, we turn business into a game that everyone in the company can play. It's fun, but it's more. It's a way of tapping into the universal desire to win, of making that desire a powerful competitive force. Winning the great game of business has the greatest reward, the constant improvement of your life and your livelihood. You only get that reward, however, by playing together as a team and by building a dynamic company. Playing and winning the great game worked for us in a big way. From 1983 to 1986, our sales grew by more than 30% a year. We worked from a loss of over $60,000 in our first year to a pre-tax earnings of $2.7 million in our fourth year. We never laid off a single person, not even when we lost a contract representing 40% of our business. By 1991, we had annual sales of more than $70 million, and our workforce had increased to about 650 people from the original 119. The most impressive number is the value of our stock. It was worth 10 cents a share at the time of the buyout. By 1992, it was worth $20. That's an increase of 20,000%. As a result, hourly associates who had been at the Springfield Remanufacturing Company from the beginning had holdings in the employee stock ownership plan worth as much as $34,000 per person. That's almost the price of a home in Springfield. We didn't do this by riding some hot technology or glamorous industry. Remanufacturing is a tough, loud, dirty business. Our people work with plugs in their ears and leave the factory covered in grease. What SRC remanufactures are engines and engine components. We take worn-out engines from cars, bulldozers, 18-wheelers, and we rebuild them. We save the parts in good shape, fix the damaged ones, and replace the ones beyond repair. But in some way, engines are incidental to what we do. Our real business is education. We teach people about business. We give them the knowledge that allows them to go out and play the game. The basic rules of the game. People who run companies know that there are really only two critical factors in business. One is to make money, and the other is to generate cash. As long as you do these two things, your company is going to be okay, even if you make mistakes along the way, as you inevitably will. I'm not saying safety is not a major issue, or quality is not a major issue, or delivery or customer service are not major issues. They are all major issues, but they are part of the process. They are not the end results or even conditions of survival. In business, you can have great customer service and fail, a terrific safety record and fail, the best quality in your industry and fail. The only way to be secure is to make money and generate cash. Everything else is a means to that end. Those simple rules apply to every business. And yet in most companies, people are never told that the survival of the company depends on those two things. People are told what to do in an 8-hour workday, but no one ever shows them how they fit into the bigger picture. No one explains how one person's actions affects another's, how each department depends on the others, what impact they all have on the company as a whole. Most important, no one tells people how to make money and generate cash. 9 times out of 10, employees don't even know the difference between the two. At SRC, we teach everybody those rules. Then we build on that simple knowledge and take people all the way to the complexity of ownership. We constantly strive to paint the big picture for the people out on the factory floor. We try to take ignorance out of the workplace and force people to get involved. Not with threats and intimidation, but with education. In the process, we are trying to close one of the biggest gaps in American business, the gap between workers and managers. We're developing a system that allows everyone to get together and work towards the same goals. To do that, you have to knock down the barriers that separate people, that keep people from coming together as a team. The biggest barrier is ignorance, which creates frustration. In most companies, there are 3 levels of ignorance. The first level is ignorance of top management. It assumes that people down the ladder are incapable of understanding its problems and responsibilities. The second level of ignorance is that of the people on the shop floor. They usually have no idea why managers do what they do and chalk up every mistake in the company to a combination of greed and stupidity. The third level of ignorance occurs within the ranks of middle management. They're constantly torn between the demands of top management and those of the workforce. They really have the most difficult role in the company because they have to please 2 masters. If they side with their people, they are against top management. If they side with top managers, they are in conflict with the workforce. Consequently, they can never please themselves. What lies at the root of all this is a basic ignorance about business. Most people who work in companies don't understand business at all. They have all kinds of misconceptions. They think profit is a dirty word. They think the owners just slip it into their bank accounts at night. They have no idea that over 40% of business profit goes to taxes. They've never heard of retained earnings. They can't conceive how a company can be earning a profit or have no cash to pay its bills, or how it can be generating cash and yet operating at a loss. This is the type of ignorance you have to eliminate if you want to get people working together as a team. Eliminating it is tough because most people find business incredibly boring. They don't want to hear about profits and cash flow. They really can't get too excited about making money for someone else. Sure, they want a job they can count on, but beyond that, they don't want to get involved. Everything they've ever heard about business makes it seem complicated, confusing, hard to understand, abstract, maybe even a little seamy. This is where the game comes in. We tell people that they have the wrong idea about business, that it really is a game, no more complicated than baseball or golf or bowling. The main difference is that the stakes are higher. How you play softball may determine whether or not you get a trophy, but how you play business will determine whether or not you can support your family, put food on your table, and fulfill your dreams. On the other hand, you don't need to be an entrepreneurial genius like Sam Walton to succeed in business. What you do need is willingness to learn the rules, master the fundamentals, and play together as a team. Everything we do at SRC is geared toward getting people involved in playing the great game of business. We teach people the rules. We show them how to keep score and follow the action, and then we flood them with the information they need to do both. We also give them a big stake in the outcome, in the form of equity, profits, and opportunities to move ahead as far as they want to go. We do all of this by using tools of business that have been around for 100 years or more. The most important of these tools are the financial statements. When people come to work at SRC, we tell them that 70% of the job is disassembly or whatever, and 30% of the job is learning. What they learn is how to make money, how to make a profit. We offer them sessions with the accounting staff, tutoring with supervisors and foremen, instruction sheets, and so on. We teach them about after-tax profits, retained earnings, equity, cash flow, everything. We want each of them to be able to read an income statement and a balance sheet. We say, you make the decision if you want to work here, but these are the ground rules we play by. We provide a lot of reinforcement. Once a week, for example, supervisors hold meetings to go over the updated financial statements. Each person writes the numbers down. Those numbers show how we are doing in relation to our annual goals and whether there will be quarterly bonuses. The more people understand, the more they want to know. Competition, peer pressure, and the thrill of the chase send the numbers flying around. As people get caught up in the game, they learn and they keep learning. Suddenly, business makes sense to everybody. Capitalism makes sense. But to understand it, you have to look at the totality. You can't keep your attention focused on one job or one department or one function. This is what happens in most organizations. People develop a very narrow focus. The game takes down walls. It forces people to realize they are on the same team. They win or lose together. And people really do love to win together. It's the best kind of success. It's much more fun than winning alone. You know you're going to get rewarded, but so is everyone else. When you look at goals like profit and cash flow, that makes people understand how they all depend on each other. It forces them to look at business from the other guy's shoes, to have a broader perspective. Ignorance can kill a company. It's amazing more companies don't do this. I worked at a giant international harvester plant near Chicago for 10 years. On Fridays, I'd go to a staff meeting where the plant manager said, "We got to make more money. We got to get more profitable." But he never taught me how to make more money. We received plenty of orders, deliver a crankcase to such and such line, cut down on accidents over there, get so-and-so productivity up. I never knew anything about making money, and here I'd supervised hundreds and hundreds of people. Finally, it dawned on me that there was a better way, the way business had been run for a long, long time, with the financial statements. If people know how to use them, that's really the simplest way to run a business. If people don't know, they won't understand, and they won't do the right things, and they will blame you when the company fails. They will say, "All this time, you've been blowing smoke up our ass, telling us what a great job we've been doing. Now you come back and tell us the company is going to fail? We can't accept that. We really can't. Where did all the money go?" Why we play the game. So let me give you the main reasons for playing the game. Reason one for playing the game, we want to live up to our end of the employment bargain. I've always believed that you take on a big obligation when you hire somebody. That person needs to bring home money, put food on the table, take care of their children. You can't take that obligation lightly. Of course, the individual has obligations to the company as well. Employment is a two-way street. As much as possible, I want to be someone's choice rather or not he or she leaves the company. It really bothers me to see people laid off through no fault of their own. To prevent that from happening, we have a contract among ourselves. Everything we do is based on a common understanding that job security is paramount, that we are creating a place for people to work not just for this year or 5 years from now, but for the next 50 years and beyond. We owe it to one another to keep the company alive. That's really why we started playing the game in the first place. We wanted some degree of job security for ourselves and for the people with whom we work. One of the lessons we learned from the demise of International Harvester is that there is no security in ignorance. The only way to know if your job is safe is by looking into financial statements. We had never dreamed that our jobs in International Harvester might be in danger. This is a company that went back 100 years, one of the 30 largest in the country, with more than 100,000 employees. My dad had retired from it. I had worked there for years. I just assumed my job was secure, and I had no way of knowing it wasn't, because no one ever taught me how to read a balance sheet. Then Harvester went down the tubes. We had no such illusions when we started at SRC. We knew our jobs were in jeopardy from the start. To buy this plant, we had to come up with $9 million, of which we were able to scrape together a grand total of $100,000 from mothers, fathers, in-laws, uncles, and friends, not to mention our own personal savings. We borrowed the rest. This is like putting $1,000 to buy a $90,000 house. You don't really own it. The bank does, and they would pull the plug the first time you miss a payment. In business terms, we had an 89-to-1 debt-to-equity ratio, which put us on a par with, say, the government of Poland. We were nearly comatose as a corporate entity. We couldn't afford to make a $10,000 mistake. Looking at this situation, we realized that there were two things we couldn't do. Number one, we couldn't run out of cash because our creditors would close us down. Number two, we couldn't destroy from within, which would be a danger if morale got bad. If either happened, we would lose the company and 119 jobs. Everyone had to know the company's financial pulse at every moment. We had to tell people where the cash was and make sure they were involved in deciding what to do with it. This is how the game began. Reason number two for playing the game? We want to do away with jobs. How often have you heard this? All we ask you to do is your job, nothing more or nothing less. Well, I don't want people just to do a job. I want them to have a purpose in what the hell they are doing. I want them to be going somewhere. I want them to be excited about getting up in the morning, looking forward to what they are going to do that day. Maybe it's a matter of tricking people into wanting to come to work. I say tricking because I don't think it's a natural thing. Most people would rather be doing something other than going to work. I certainly would. But they don't feel they have a choice. I want to get rid of the living dead. I can't stand going into factories and businesses and seeing those faceless people standing around. They don't look healthy. They don't act healthy. They are a big problem for corporate America. I'm talking about the people who are there because it's a job, whose attitude is, I have to be here, but I don't have to like it. I'll do it for my family, not for myself. On the other hand, you can't blame them for feeling that way about their work when they are constantly being told just to do their job, nothing more or nothing less. Why would anybody think a job is more than a job when that's all the company expects it to be? But if you set up the work to be a step on the path to something else, then it takes on a new meaning. It becomes more than just a job. To do that, you have to get people to dream. You have to show them that there really are pots at the end of the rainbow. And you can get your pot if you want it and if you're willing to work for it. Business is a tool for achieving your highest dreams, your financial dreams, that is. Obviously, there are some dreams business can't help with. It can't restore a person's health. It can't endow you with artistic talent. It can help you to achieve some success in life. It can give people hope. Once you understand the game, you can take it as far as you want to. To be sure, some jobs are bad, demeaning, the kind of job nobody wants to do. We had a job that involved cleaning certain parts of chemicals. There was a cleaning tank, and someone had to stand there all the time in a splash-proof raincoat and rain pants, even when it was 90 degrees outside. Nobody wanted that job, so we took a tip from the Japanese. We got rid of it. We robotized it or computerized the jobs people didn't want. But then what? There are still a lot of jobs in this world that involve putting washers on bolts. You can't walk away from it. The work is boring, but it has to be done. The game is to attempt to create an environment wherein everybody can take pleasure in their work, even the people who put washers on bolts. They can be doing something else at the same time. We take people beyond the job and give them the opportunity to use their intelligence to achieve something. In effect, you steal a little bit of somebody's brain while she's applying the manual effort. You get in there, you turn on a light, and you create a stimulation. She may be putting washers on bolts, but at the same time, she's thinking ways of making her environment, position, and life better. She is not just making a contribution to a better product. She is making a contribution to a better life. She's moving in a positive direction. She's going somewhere. Reason number three for playing the game. We want to get rid of the employee mentality. The big payoff for us for playing the game is that we become a more educated and flexible workforce. We can respond instantaneously to changes in the market. We can turn on a dime for a customer if we have to. We can respond to problems the length of time it takes to place a phone call. You can do all of them because we have a company filled with people who are not only owners, but who think and act like owners and not like employees. That's an important distinction. Getting the people to think and act like owners goes far beyond giving them equity. Many companies set up employee stock ownership plans expecting some miraculous change of attitude in the workforce. They are then shocked to find that people still think and act like employees. They insist on being told what to do. They don't take initiative or responsibility. They make excuses and blame other people for their own failures. They constantly pass the buck to someone else. You can only nurture it through the process of education. The process doesn't stop because business is always changing. Markets change, technology changes, customers change, and the needs of the company are constantly changing. The demands of ownership are always changing. To keep up with those demands, you have to keep learning. The nice part is that as you learn, you grow and get more out of life and have fun. The whole idea behind the game is to create an environment in which people are learning all the time. They're seeing all kinds of situations, both sides of every story. They are allowed to make decisions, to fail with incorrect decisions, and to learn from their failures and to try again. The numbers are an important part of that. The numbers serve as the bond, the basis of trust. By giving people the numbers, I can say to them, if you don't believe me, look it up and see if what I am saying is true. This is life we are dealing with. It may be frustrating, but this is life. It's all there in the numbers. Reason number four for playing the game. We want to create and distribute wealth. One thing that scares me about our economy is the whole trend of downsizing. What's really going on is that companies are getting rid of people and replacing them with machines. They view people as a contingent liability. They are missing the fact that productivity depends on people. I don't disagree that machines can't make you more competitive. They can absorb overhead. They work without breaks and vacations and don't waste time. What machines can't do is figure out how to make money. Only people can do that. If you have people who know how to make money, you will win every time. But to get people to that point requires education. They have to be taught why it's important to make money and generate cash. Then you have to figure out how to keep them focused on doing those two simple things. I think we're lying to people if we tell them that there's another way to improve productivity. That's important because it's only by improving productivity that we improve standards of living. All the other ways of increasing output are inflationary. Sooner or later, you have to pay the piper. But if we can improve productivity, we can create a society that's continually getting better, a society in which people do more to help each other. As it is, we are becoming a society of the haves and the have-nots. What's happening is that the rich know how to play the game, and they're playing it well. Meanwhile, the society as a whole has a declining standard of living. That standard will continue to decline unless we figure out how to become more productive. So why can't we figure that out? Part of the problem is that we can't increase the standard of living without generating wealth. And we hate everyone who generates wealth, whether it's the oil companies or the doctors or the entrepreneurs. That's a big mistake. It isn't the generation of wealth we should hate, rather the distribution of wealth. Our real problem is we haven't taught people how to share in that distribution. To be frank, I don't think wealth is distributed fairly in this country or around the world. To me, it's inexcusable for Lee Iacocca to pay himself $4.5 million as CEO at the same time that he's laying off thousands of employees, and he is by no means the worst offender. On the other hand, I don't think we can solve the problems by taking away Iacocca's millions. That's really just a drop in the bucket. The only way to solve these problems long-term is to make people conscious of generating profits and understanding profits, where profits come from and where they go. Somebody's got to be out there teaching about wealth, about retained earnings, equity, about an earnings multiple, and what these things mean and how it can affect them individually. If we don't do it, we'll never increase the standard of living. We remain in this ignorant, dormant stage where we continually think a job is a job is a job, and the decline will continue. But you have to begin by getting people away from focusing on the specific mechanical things they do, because there's more to business than that. Business is dealing with some of our most pressing social issues these days, like healthcare. This is the first time I can remember when people on the floor, even those at the job entry level, are paying attention to fringe benefits. Health insurance has always been taken for granted. Now it has moved to center stage. It's an overhead item, a hidden cost, a cost people don't necessarily see. It's important for people to pay attention to the cost. But how do you take them from focusing on washers and bolts to focusing on healthcare if you haven't devised some system for explaining it to them so that it all makes sense? The game is one way to do that. We're teaching people how to take care of themselves. In the process, we're redistributing wealth. We're redistributing the earnings of the company back to the people who created them.